If a team must vacate a tag, that basically means they only have one tag, which should mean the free agent class dramatically gets better. I mean, you mentioned the Bucks. They either have Shaq Barrett, who's, you know, one of the best sack artists in the NFL, or you have Jameis Winston as a free agent. You either have Derrick Henry or Ryan Tannehill as a free agent. It really does. Or Amari Cooper or Dak Prescott. Dak's obviously not going to be a free agent. So Amari Cooper now goes into the pool. Dramatic impact on these teams. We're going to see some teams, like the Titans, for instance, going to try to get a deal done with Ryan Tannehill before the window closes to try to lock him in.
That was Ian Rappaport talking about the franchise tag window opening today and what the potential impacts of the new CBA could be on that. Because remember, under the new CBA proposal, you can't have both. You can't have franchise tag and the transition tag, which could play a big factor as to what happens with the Titans during this offseason in free agency. Welcome back into Morning Drive. Robbie Stanley alongside Alex Apple from Fox 17 News. Alex, we've spent all week talking about, you know, Brady, Tannehill, this discussion. But let's just operate right now under the premise that the Titans are wanting to bring Ryan Tannehill back. Obviously, Derrick Henry is a part of this as well. Jack Conklin, Logan Ryan. Not having the ability to use both the franchise tag and the transition tag could be gigantic for this team, because I think there was a pretty good possibility that they could have used both in this circumstance. I think no general manager and certainly no player really ever wants to deal with the tags, but sometimes they're a necessary evil that you have to do. It's not great for relationships in terms of negotiations when that happens, but I think the Titans were well positioned this year that if things started to break down in terms of long-term talks with either Derrick Henry or Ryan Tannehill, you at least had those weapons in your back pocket. And now, if this new CBA ends up getting approved shortly by the Predators, by the Players Association, you may not have both options. The Predators are not going to approve
it. I would have been surprised, though, if they had tagged both of those guys. I think the tag for the Titans enables them in one cent, whether you want to get out of Derrick Henry's contract or potentially get out of Ryan Tannehill's contract, it allows you one more year to wait and see if that's what they want to do. I mean, who's to say that they wouldn't have tried to sign both of them? Now it puts you in with, you know, $25 million for Tannehill, let's just say, and probably more, and $13 to $15 million on Derrick Henry on your books for 3 to 4 years if you don't use the tag. But surely, by this point, I mean, if you're John Robinson and you're sitting around the building hoping that you have two tags and that has now sunk your offseason, then you've done a terrible job of preparing. Knowing John Robinson, I almost guarantee you that that's not how they've gone about their offseason. So if you can still use one, I don't think it hurts them. In some ways, maybe it even helps them. We just heard Ian Rappaport's clip about the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Do you want Jameis Winston back? You want to tag him? Do you want to bring Shaq Barrett back, who was maybe the best 3-4 outside linebacker in the class, the best pass rusher in the class? You can argue over whether you like Clowney or someone else better, but he's right up there.
Yep.
That does increase the free agent pool for the Titans. And if you're going to use one tag, let's just say you're going to use one tag. Sake of example, who do you want to tag, Tannehill or Derrick Henry?
I would go Henry.
So you tag Derrick Henry. You've got that on the books for 1 year. It doesn't allow you quite as much first-year cap flexibility, because in the NFL, if you sign Derrick Henry for $14 million a year, on the first year of his cap hit is probably not going to be $14 million. It's going to allow the Titans some flexibility. His cap hit is probably going to be about 75% of that. That's just an average. It could be different than that. So if you're looking at him at about 10, the cap is going to lock you in. I mean, the tag is going to lock you in. So that's going to be the full salary for Derrick Henry, and then you're going to pay out $30 million for Tom Brady or Ryan Tannehill, whoever you like. It does maybe even offer you less flexibility. So I think that there is incentive to avoid the tag if you can, because if you're not going to bring back Conklin, you maybe don't bring back Logan Ryan, well, you still need to improve this roster. You're still on the precipice. You want to get it to the Super Bowl. Being able to bring in Yannick Ngakoue or Shaq Barrett, they probably won't bring in Clowney. I don't think he's quite the scheme fit or the talent that they're looking for. It's really a true edge rusher. You really need to bring one of those guys in to continue to make your defense better. You lose Dean Pease. Let's make no mistake about it. Big loss.
Yep.
And so the Titans need something that's going to, give them over the edge. Whatever that extra oomph is going to be, maybe it's an outside pass rusher. How you use the tag Probably makes a big difference in whether that's possible.
And we've heard some people talk about potentially using the transition tag for a guy like Jack Conklin, who, you know, he's going to receive some heavy interest around the NFL. Tackles, you know, it's obviously a premium position. People are going to want to pay Jack Conklin a lot of money for his services. A transition tag could be used by the Titans to at least have the ability to match that at some point if somebody comes in with an offer. Without that, I think that makes keeping Jack Conklin a lot more difficult, because Jack Conklin on the open market may make a lot more money than if you're the Titans, you're really willing to pay. And at that point, you wouldn't even have the option to match it.
And he's a decent, not great player. So do you really want to have that much money sunk into your right tackle? At that point, your line's getting very expensive. With Roger Saffold and Taylor Lewan on the left side, you've just re-signed Ben Jones. You've got a cheap guy on a rookie contract, Nate Davis, at right guard. But that's an awful lot of money sunk into your offensive line, and it's really just staying status quo. Jack Conklin keeps you status quo. Now, if you're bringing in Tom Brady, you better have a right tackle. I mean, that guy is much of a statue as you can have in the league right now. Now, to his credit, he does a great job of getting rid of the ball, and he'll just throw the ball into the dirt when pressure comes. But you better have a right tackle. You can't go with a hole there. It certainly changes the flexibility not having the transition tag. Would they have used it anyway? I would argue
Doubtful.
That maybe that it's smart for them not to use it just for a cap flexibility standpoint. But if you're not sure you want to invest 4 years of $60 million on Derrick Henry, well, then use it. Because it keeps the band together for 1 year. Nashville stays excited. Hopefully Derrick Henry reports. You know, you don't know how players react to the tags, but it allows you to keep the band together. So it's almost like the not sure tag for the Titans. Are we sure that Derrick Henry, 3 years from now, is still going to be worth $15 million? Well, he's worth $15 million probably next year for sure.
Yeah.
3 years from now, you don't know, so the tag would enable you to do that. And just as we're talking about this on one of the TV monitors in the studio, they're talking about Tom Brady becoming a free agent. Brady makes this different too, because if you're sure, I mean, you have to be sure. If you're going to go after that, you can't get stunned and let Tannehill walk and all of a sudden you get none. The Titans are smart enough, they'll avoid
that. That is the absolute last option.
The one or the other, if the Titans will absolutely bungle, their cards are coming. Now, but if Tom Brady is your answer, well, then losing the transition tag probably is only a loss for the very reason that you brought up, Jack Conklin. If you're bringing back Tannehill, I don't think losing the transition tag is going to make a great deal of difference to you.
We've talked all week long about the proposed CBA from the NFL to the NFLPA, and it was passed by the player rep 17-14 with one vote abstaining. Aaron Rodgers came out with some pretty strong thoughts yesterday against the proposed CBA. Marquise Pouncey had some very strong thoughts against the proposed CBA. What have been your thoughts? We've kind of got everybody's opinion and vibe on this. What have been your thoughts of the proposed CBA by the NFL, extending the season to a 17-game schedule, expanding the playoffs, things of that nature?
Well, there's some questions for the players that I can understand that aren't entirely answered. The 17th game, are your contracts that are already baked in, how are those going to change? I think the players have been a little bit unhappy in how those negotiations have gone so far. But you know, it's passed, and the owners passed it. Now it goes to the full NFLPA membership for a league-wide vote. But some of the biggest detractors are big names. I mean, Aaron Rodgers,
J.J. Watt,
right off the bat, came out and said he wasn't so sure of him. And Marquise Pouncey just went off. You can't play that on radio. So the fact that those big names are speaking out against it throws a wrench in this, because does Aaron Rodgers' opinion matter to A.J. Brown, who's going to get a vote on this? I don't know, but maybe it does. You know, maybe they all follow the top guy's lead. So it throws into some uncertainty. Whatever happens, all I care about is that they don't lock out. I mean, I'm just an NFL fan. If they don't lock out, I'll be happy. Whatever else they work out, I'd love it if they shrunk the preseason. I'd certainly love to get an extra game, but I certainly understand the risk of that for the players. Just don't lock out. Whatever you got to do to work it out, work it out. I don't care if the Titans lose all their tags and it throws their offseason off. You know, some Titans football is better than no Titans football, and Titans football with nobody tagged or one person tagged or two person tagged is better than no football at all. So that's my thoughts on that. Anything else is sort of water under the bridge once you get this approved.
I do wonder what, you know, your average players think about some of the stances the big-time players have come out. Because you look at the proposal by the owners, and there are a lot of benefits the players get in this, not only from a financial standpoint, moving from 47% of the revenue share to a potential 48.5%, but, you know, there's some medical benefits that go along with it.
Pensions,
all these different things. You know, if I'm a guy that's, like, on the fringe and, you know, maybe my career is going to last 3 or 4 years, I'm looking at Aaron Rodgers like, you know what? I mean, you got your money.
That's
like,
a great
like,
point.
Why do you care?
And I'm not going to sit here for a year on the shelf and increase my, for lack of a variance of vocabulary, increase my shelf life.
Right.
You're not going to sit there and then all of a sudden, you know, you've lost a year and teams have moved on or they've forgotten you. Right. Very good point. I mean, if you are just a tweener, is that really something that you want to mess around and play with? Probably not. If you're Aaron Rodgers, you're going to come back whether they lock out for a year and you're going to play. Right. Great point. You know, but you're a Packers fan. I mean, he's got to be the loudest voice in the arena a lot of times. And I can't imagine that that doesn't have any sway. But if I was a player, you know, you do come at it with a if you're like a Taylor Lewan, going to play in this league for a decade, the long term health benefits, you will suffer from that, whatever they may be. So, yeah, I'm taking a real critical look at this. If I'm Khalif Raymond on the Titans and, you know, maybe I play 3-4 years. If I get lucky, I play for 10 because I find a niche. You know, if I'm on that 3-4 range, I would definitely vote yes.
When we come back, what's the riskiest decision the Titans are faced with this offseason, and what could have the biggest impact in terms of a negative impact if it happens for the Titans this offseason? We'll get into that next. You're listening to Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Alex Apple here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Alex Apple from Fox 17. Predators head coach John Hines will join us at 7:30 for coffee with the coach. So really looking forward to having John Hines on with us. We're talking Titans right now, Alex, and anytime you have an offseason like this where there are some big-time decisions you have to make as a general manager and as an organization, there's automatically risk that comes with that. We talked about Brady and Tannehill. There's risk there, potentially, if you really botch it, of losing both. I would say that's highly unlikely that that happens. But you also run the risk the longer this Brady thing goes on and drags out, of Ryan Tannehill at some point just being like, you know, I'm fed up with this. Like, why was what I did last year not good enough? Like, why are we even having this conversation? Obviously, the risk in Derrick Henry is a running back. We know how that goes with contracts in the NFL, in the modern-day NFL, and the risk you take there. Logan Ryan was a huge part of their defense and has been a huge part of their defense. It's ever since he's been here, Dean Pease did a lot of different things with him in terms of blitz packages, in terms of coverage in the slot. And then Jack Conklin, while he struggled in his career with injury and overcoming that and getting back to his top level, I thought played really well last year for the most part. So, I mean, it's going to be really unlikely you keep all four of those guys. Which one out of those groups is the biggest risk in terms of the negative impact it could have on your team if things go south here in the offseason and negotiations don't go the way that you think they'll go?
Well, you have to get the quarterback figured out one way or the other. Now, the Titans are going to know. If they're not going to commit to Tannehill, there's tampering rules in the NFL, I know, but, you know, all these guys are so connected.
Especially with
they're
going
to know whether Tom Brady is going to, show any interest in them or, you know, play ball. And if he's not going to play ball, you're just going to sign Tannehill. Now, you're calling this risk, but I would argue that while, sure, there's risk in losing any player, John Robinson yet so far in his tenure has not had to flirt with free agency with a lot of guys. The guys that he wanted back, he signed before they hit free agency. But it is nice. It is a sign of the time for the Titans that there are guys on their roster that they want to bring back. That we're not just talking about, oh man, I'd really like to go out and get so-and-so off of another team's roster. Now finally you're in a position where your guys are coveted. You have to make some smart decisions. But the teams that are great in the NFL realize who they have to let walk, when they can extend salaries, but they've also got a good enough draft pipeline to where those guys start to play there. So it becomes a point where the biggest risk for the Titans is that you sign these guys, and you have a big offseason to me, but it's that the guys that are on their early rookie contracts or smaller contracts like Dane Cruikshank, needs to start helping you on defense. You know, that's a random name for you, but he's a guy that you drafted, needs to start playing a role. You need guys to continue to step up like David Long at linebacker. When those guys lengthen your roster, all of a sudden you're in a much better position. You can spend that money because you've got guys on rookie contracts, and then you just have to make smart decisions about when they move on. But if the Titans don't draft well and develop well on the back end, that's the real risk, that you end up anchored, like we were talking about with the Minnesota Wild and Ryan Suter's contract. You end up anchored by those contracts because they've not had enough guys come up from the AHL and play well. The Titans would be anchored if they don't have enough guys in the draft on rookie contracts step up and play well. Scouting becomes imperative. It's a cycle here. The biggest risk I see is that. Are the Ryan Tannehills and Derrick Henry and Jack Conklins of the world probably going to give you exactly what you think that they're going to give you? Yeah. So I think that there's less risk in how they're going to perform, more risk in the rest of your roster and how that affects the rest of your roster.
Logan Ryan makes me very nervous because I don't like the Titans' chances of getting him back this offseason. I think he's just going to be a casualty of the situation, and I think he has been so important to what they've been able to do defensively. And to me, if Logan Ryan's not there, the pass rush part of this becomes so
huge.
Much more important because, look, I mean, Malcolm Butler, I think, played much better before he got hurt this past season. Adoree Jackson has been very up and down, and I understand both of those guys play on the outside and Logan Ryan was on the inside. You still have to find somebody to replace Logan Ryan on the inside, which, if we're being honest, whoever that is probably not going to be as good as Logan Ryan
but
is
me,
in
I
that role.
But to me, I look at it differently. I mean, I think that Logan Ryan's 29, so how long would you sign him for? 3-4 years, be 32. I mean, and he is a good athlete, not a great athlete. So if his athleticism wanes just a little bit, I think that becomes very hard in the slot. I think Logan Ryan, to me, and you can disagree and tell me why, is the kind of guy that maybe you let him go. He's the casualty here for bringing in these other guys, but you need the guy that you drafted, the guy that's on a lower contract to step up. Now, I don't necessarily think that's just Sean Sims. I mean, I think you probably have to get maybe a first, second rounder, or at least somebody that you think can contribute right away. Because to your point, he's no doubt he's incredible to the incredibly important to the defense, but I think he's the kind of cap casualty that you could live with.
Well, I think in order to do that and to live with it, you got to address the pass rush. And we assume that's going to be a priority for the Titans this offseason in both free agency and the draft. But if you're not able to land a big-time pass-rushing free agent, I mean, your best pass rusher coming back next year is probably going to be Harold Landry. And do you have a lot of confidence that Harold Landry is going to be good enough in the pass-rushing aspect to really have an effect on the quarterback consistently, which he was not able to do last year? To me, then the loss of Logan Ryan at that point becomes pretty big because you're not able to generate a pass rush with your normal 3- or 4-man rush, but also you don't have the weapon that Logan Ryan was coming off the edge as a blitzer. I mean, he was really skilled in that area as well. So to me, that's when, if Logan Ryan is gone and he's not back, you have to address the pass rush and you have to get a top guy in order to do it.
So let's say Logan Ryan's gone, though, and you can either sign Jack Conklin, basically, or you can sign, and I mean like a really high-end pass rush. If you sign Jack Conklin, the odds are maybe that you go more towards the draft to get your pass rusher, and you look for a pass rusher at 27 if you feel like there's going to be one there. Maybe you move back if you feel like you're able. But if you were not going to re-sign Logan Ryan, would you rather have back Jack Conklin, or would you get that pass rusher?
Oh, to me, I'd rather have the pass rusher. I mean, I think they could be in a position where they could conceivably get both. It'll be hard to get both back. You can do it. But to me, the pass rush, when you look at this team, that is, you have to have one.
I mean, I totally agree. And that's the one thing that they've not had.
Yeah, and maybe you can bridge the gap. If you can't get Conklin back here, maybe you go out and you re-sign Dennis Kelly to fill that role. Now, you don't feel great about that. Certainly not as good as you'd feel about Jack Conklin. But to me, if you come back next year and you still don't have an effective pass rush that you can generate pressure without having to send the house all the time, it's going to be really difficult, I think, at that point for this team to take that next step and compete for a Super Bowl. Because, I mean, Super Bowl teams have that. I mean, you just have to have that.
So here's my offseason. You or anyone that's listening can tell me if you disagree. If the quarterback, if you bring back Tannehill, fine. But if you think that you can get Tom Brady, to me, he's Tom Brady. He's won 7 Super Bowls, and he has the chance, however be it his skills are diminishing, to, from a perspective of whatever's left in the tank plus his experience to push this team over the top. So you want to do that, go get him. But let's just say, for the sake of example, they bring back Tannehill, and then you franchise tag Derrick Henry. It decreases a little bit of your flexibility, but then I would bring back Jack Conklin and try to sign the pass rusher. I think you've got to let Logan Ryan go. It does make me nervous, and you know, you would love to have Logan Ryan and the pass rusher, because that's really when your defense would take off.
Right, but that's going to be really impossible.
But
to do,
I think
to be
if you can, I think if you can go pass rusher and Jack Conklin, it doesn't leave you with a glaring hole. You probably need a cornerback in the draft, but I think that is ultimately what gives you the most draft flexibility. Because if you don't bring back Conklin, you got to get a tackle.
Yep.
Or you at least have to get Dennis Kelly and like another Dennis Kelly to compete with him. So I think that gives them the most flexibility. Or would you spend your money differently?
No, I agree with you there. I think that does give you the most flexibility. The question I have in all this, because, and I was talking to Floyd Reese about this too, it's so difficult to project, especially where they are in the draft at 29. If you take a pass rusher in the first round, you're not talking about really an elite guy at that point. Like Chase Young, obviously, is not going to fall to 29. So at that point, a pass rusher in the draft is kind of a crapshoot. You see, a lot of times people can't make the transition from being an effective pass rusher in college to getting to that point in the NFL. And Floyd told me, like, it's really hard to determine it and kind of project how that works. That's what I'd become worried about at that point.
But let me read you the list of free agents, and you tell me who you'd sign. Now, some of these guys probably get re-signed by their own team, but right now, this is who would be out there. Jadeveon Clowney from Seattle. He's more of a 3-4 outside linebacker. Chris Jones, more of a defensive end kind of player from Kansas City. And then you get to Yannick Ngakoue, who's always played in a 4-3. Shaq Barrett from the Buccaneers plays in a 3-4 as outside linebacker. And then you get to like the Dante Fowler, Bud Dupree, Matthew Judon from the Ravens realm. Like, who out of there, do you see a difference maker on that list? And do you see a guy that you can go get?
I mean, there are several difference makers. I think most of them are going to end up back with their teams. Like Yannick Ngakoue maybe is the exception there. But like you said, he's been in a 4-3. Can you make that transition? I think he probably could. But you're going to get into a bidding war there with a lot of other teams. That's the risk you take, obviously, in free agency. But to me, that's a risk that John Robinson and the Titans, they've got to get headfirst into, because that's a huge part of
the
team.
And even if only half of those guys resign, you're looking at like three or four of them, and then you're fighting against 32 teams for three or four guys.
That's right.
Tough.
When we come back, Predators head coach John Hines is going to join us. It's that time of the week, Coffee with the Coach. That'll be next here on Morning Drive on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Alex Apple from Fox 17 News. Scheduled to have John Hines join us in just a few minutes, Predators head coach. A gigantic game tonight, Alex, for the Predators against the Calgary Flames. A team right ahead of them in the standings. 72 points Calgary has. The Predators right now with 70 points on the season. This is going to be an environment I think that's going to be really fun to be a part of tonight. And this is where it gets fun for me is, you know, it's a long season, obviously a grind when it's 82 games. There's a lot of hockey being played, especially when you get to like late December to mid-January. There's kind of a dog days feel to a season that happens similar in baseball when you're in like, you know, late July, mid-August. It can be really difficult at times, I think, not only for the players but the fans as well. This is the fun part. You're after the trade deadline now. It's a really important stretch of hockey coming up. I'm really excited for this last 20-game stretch here. It's going to be fun.
You're at the equivalent of the horse racing announcer saying, down the stretch they come.
Yeah.
20 games. The Predators, in this sense, are playing for their lives. They've got a game tonight against Calgary, and that gives you a chance to time for the first playoff spot. And it gets to one of the things I'm looking forward to asking Coach Hines, who I think is now on the line, is how do teams react to being in these playoff-like scenarios late in the regular season?
Let's do that. Let's bring Predators head coach John Hines to the microphone to join us here on Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Alex Apple. John, how you doing? Thanks for coming on with us this morning, man.
I'm great. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So, John, a big stretch for you guys as of late, points in six out of your last seven games, a gigantic game tonight against the Calgary Flames. What did you like most about the way your team has played during this last stretch here?
Yeah, well, you know, I think we're getting some more consistency in our mindset. You know, one of the things when we first came in, obviously the team was struggling, and when that happens, a lot of times just the belief in how you play, and when things don't go great, before guys kind of went like a little bit individualistic or tried to do things themselves as opposed to really understanding what we need to do to be able to, A, recover from some adversity or setbacks or whatever it may be. And now we're more sticking to the game plan. Guys are playing more of a team game, more together, not trying to do it all themselves. And I think that's really been the biggest difference. And then we've just been able to breed some consistency in our play and our mindset, and that's allowed us to be able to play in tight games and find a way to win tight games.
John, you and I talked about it a little bit after the game the other night against Ottawa, but it really has been amazing from my vantage point to watch Ryan Ellis come back into the lineup and to be as productive and get back to his top level as quickly as he's been able to do that. What have been your impressions of watching Ryan Ellis come back in and really take down as many minutes as he's been able to do effectively since he's come back in the last three games?
Well, it's been pretty impressive, but I will say from past experiences, I think when you have a guy that's played as long as Ryan has, and he's a true professional in every sense of the word, meaning he's not only a talented player, but he studies the game, he knows the game, he works at it, he's in excellent shape, he takes care of himself. So when a player is coming back from injury and they're not able to, really come in, even with a new coach, where we've made some system tweaks. He hasn't had a ton of practice time, but film study, watching practices, watching the games, he was preparing himself mentally to be able to get back, and he's done a fantastic job with his fitness level. So now when a player like that jumps back into your lineup, because he's a smart player, he studied, he knows what he's doing, it really just comes back to getting in a game, getting some game reps, and usually guys like that can come back fairly quickly because of their mental engagement and also the way that he worked on his fitness level while he was off the ice.
Coach Alex Appel here. I want to know, in your experience, do teams react differently to being in the scenario like you guys are in right now, where you're with 20 games left in the regular season? In a lot of ways, every game is like a playoff game. And when, by starting that sort of intense portion of your schedule early, some people would think that that seems to benefit teams. Do teams react differently to that, or how do most teams handle that when you've been around them?
Yeah, well, most teams, when you get into the situation we're in, I mean, the team's been through some adversity, and I think you can look at it two ways. There's been a lot of adversity this year for the group, but, here we are with 20 games left, and they've battled enough, they fought, they've gone through adversity, they understand a little bit more, I think, what works and what doesn't work, how we need to play, the intensity and competitive level that this group needs to play with to be able to win, I think is a positive thing. And now you're coming down the stretch run. And one of the things we talked to the team about when we first got here was our objective at that point was, let's get ourselves in position to be able to play meaningful games in March. And that would mean that we've won enough, we're in the playoff race, we're right there. And usually, this time of year, there's a certain way you need to play to win. And for us, I think there's these external motivational factors too, that we're in a wild card spot, we're fighting for that, we've had some success as of late. Well, now it's, I think there's a belief in how we need to play. Now we have to remain consistent. And if we do that and wind up winning games, you're playing at an intensity level heading into the playoffs that is makes you more playoff ready than sometimes, coasting in with some breathing room into the playoffs. You may have some games to spare, where for us, we got to be on task every night.
John, Philip Forsberg, obviously a guy that's really talented, has put up a ton of goals throughout his career with the Predators, has scored some big-time clutch goals as well. Not a goal so far in February, but I feel like his game has still been there. He's still been getting chances. What have been your impressions of Philip Forsberg the last month or so?
Yeah, it's. I think you're exactly right there. I mean, he hasn't had the production that either we would like him or we're going to need from him in the month of February, but he has had multiple opportunities to score. It's not like his scoring chances have dried up. And I think that's the most important thing sometimes with an offensive player, that you're really focusing on the opportunity that they are getting scoring chances. And then it comes to a little bit of a mental battle that a player like him, they thrive on scoring. So sometimes when that's not there, we need to make sure, and he needs to make sure that, his game is stays strong and stays where it needs to be, and not focus so much on the fact that he hasn't scored, but why hasn't he created either chances or more chances and make sure that the game doesn't veer off based on whether the puck goes in the net or not.
When you took over this team, Coach, what was the hardest thing to learn about the individual players? Is it how to push them or how to coach them from an individual level?
Yeah, it is. It's really how to – it's understanding them and getting to know them and then how to use them in situations, who should play where, who belongs on what lines, who can you count on in certain situations. Because you don't have – like in training camp, you have an opportunity. You get 3 weeks of games and practices where you can see some things, and the points don't count. So now, you know, you jump in midseason and every point matters. You're trying to make up some ground. And then, as you said, it's finding the right motivational buttons, situational play, combinations, special teams combinations. That's probably the biggest challenge coming in midseason as a coach.
So is Forsberg a guy that you talk to a lot when he's going through a little bit of a scoring slump? I mean, do you need to push him, or is he a guy that you kind of just let work that out himself?
No, it's both. I mean, that's part of where the coaching comes in, is that I think – you know, you have to be able to talk with him and meet with him and show him some things. Hey, here's the things that we really like and need to continue to go on. But there's some areas where you can get yourself into scoring areas. These are some decisions with the puck that you know, maybe he's taking himself out of offensive situations by forcing something, where if he just remains patient, makes the right decision, keeps himself in an offensive situation, then that's where he's going to generate more chances. And the more chances you generate, the more opportunities you're going to be able to score. So it is important, I think, when a player like him goes through a scoring slump, that there is communication, there is positive feedback, but there's also constructive feedback of what can also be better.
Predators coach John Hines on the line with us. And John, last thing for you here. You know, you've been here for about a month and a half now. What's life been like for you settling into this transition? What's it been like getting to know a new city, a new coaching staff, all these things, kind of a whirlwind happening at once for you?
Yeah, it's been. I think whirlwind is a good word for it. But you know, there is a great staff here. So from the hockey perspective, it's excellent people to work with. David's been great. The coaching staff, the players. You know, it's a tremendous organization. So when you first get the job, you know that you're excited to come work with good people. There's been a lot of work. You know, it's when you come in midstream, you're trying to change some things on the fly, as you said, getting to know players, trying to have some individual meetings, trying to have team meetings. So from a work perspective, it's been exciting and challenging. And then it's, you know, I mean, Nashville's a tremendous city. I haven't had a ton of opportunity to explore the city as much, but obviously at night or on a night off, there's great restaurants, very convenient, great city. So certainly excited to continue that, but also in the off season when my family moves down here, be able to get to, I think, and enjoy and explore a little bit more than you do in this short season.
Predators coach John Hines has been our guest here on Morning John. Thanks so much for taking the time to come on with us this morning. We really appreciate it.
I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Predators coach John Hines, a big game tonight against the Calgary Flames in the two teams that hold the wild card spots right now in the Western Conference. And you heard him talk about Forsberg there. I thought that in particular was interesting in that, you know, you start to worry about these players when they're not getting chances. That really hasn't been the case for Philip Forsberg. He's been a guy throughout his career that can be very streaky. And when he turns it on offensively and they start to go in the net for him, sometimes they come in bunches. And they did that to start the season. He had a stretch to start the season where, you know, it seemed like he was scoring every game and then he got hurt. I think the Predators are waiting for another stretch like that from Philip Forsberg. I mean, heck, there have been times throughout his career, I think he had a back-to-back hat trick one time. So he's shown at times he can be very streaky. I think you feel good if you're John Hines and the Predators if he's continuing to get chances, which for the most part he has been. Not really as much last game against Ottawa, but, I mean, you think back to those back-to-back games against the Blues. He had a ton of chances in those games, had some chances in the Carolina game as well. So you feel like eventually those are going to start to go in the back of the net for him.
Wouldn't it be nice for that hot streak to start tonight against the very team that's right ahead of you in the standings? Now, it was interesting, though, that he said, you know, he's still getting scoring chances. He kind of lays it on the player. Like, it's up to Philip Forsberg to put the puck in the back of the net. And whether that is a concentration thing or, you know, just a minor mental thing even, you hope that you can push through it. And it's really interesting as a new coach. I think the psychology of coaching and, you know, interacting with players that are all different is how you push them and figuring out, you know, is Philip Forsberg a guy that values more information, less information? How do I get him out of this slump? That's the ultimate question for John Hines right now.
It is. We'll get into this a little bit more when we come back, talking about not only Forsberg, but kind of the mental way to come about approaching a new team, especially this Predators group that's been together for so long. How has John Hines been able to push those buttons? We'll get into that next. You're listening to Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Alex Appel here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. That was Predators head coach John Hines joining us in the last segment. Some very interesting comments there that we're going to get into in just a second. But first, I have a pair of tickets to give away to see Five Finger Death Punch at Bridgestone Arena on Sunday, May 17th. The show is presented by our sister station, 102.9 The Buzz. Be caller 5 at 737-1025. That's 615-737-1025. And you can wear a pair of tickets to see Five Finger Death Punch at Bridgestone Arena on Sunday, May 17th. Caller 5.
You can't beat free.
You can't beat free. That's the best price.
What do you think about the John Hines interview? What stood out to me would be that he did admit, it's sort of what we were talking about, his quote was that playing meaningful games late in the season, and really, I mean, even with 20 games left, and here we sit February 27th, and they feel like they're playing for their playoff lives, does make you more playoff ready than coasting in with some breathing room in the playoffs. The last 2 years, really, the Predators have coasted in with a little bit of breathing room. Last year, they were trying to win the division, and they snuck that out at the end. But it wasn't as if there was a lingering question as to whether they would make the playoffs. The last time the Predators made a really deep run, there was a lingering question of whether they'd make the playoffs. You got to hope to recoup that magic.
You do, and I do think there is something to that. Now, I've heard some fans kind of say, you know, maybe it's a better approach to kind of be the wild card team fighting and scratching and clawing and getting your way in. I think if that were the case, you would see wild card teams go win the Stanley Cup every single season, and that doesn't really happen. It does happen on occasion. We've seen it happen with the LA Kings. The Predators got to the Stanley Cup final in 2017, so there's certainly something to be said for scratching and clawing and being able to be playing your best hockey heading into the playoffs. I do think that is important. And I do think, you know, having to be in the position the Predators are in right now, where you're forced to play that way, otherwise you're not going to make the playoffs, that can be very beneficial if you do make it and once you get to the playoffs. Now, at the end of the day, it's all about, you know, talent's a big part of it, playing the right way, your big players coming up and playing at the right time, and goaltending. I mean, a lot of the playoffs are always going to boil down to those four things. And I think at the end of the day, those four things are probably the most important factors of playoff success, but there's no, and health as well, obviously that goes without saying, but there's no question that being in a position the Predators are right now is going to force them to bring that intensity that maybe otherwise, especially like the year they won the President's Trophy, like you can say that you want to keep moving in the right direction all you want to and continue to have that intensity, but we all know, like, when you've been in the playoffs for like a month and you've wrapped up the division and you've wrapped up the best record in the Western Conference, the intensity is just not going to be the same down the stretch. I mean, there's just no way it could be.
The biggest benefit is that the intensity level you already feel. So it's not as if 20 games from now it's like, well, here we go. You know, we got to play twice as hard, and playoff hockey is so different than the regular season. But you really, the benefit of it all is if you get hot. I mean, if you still kind of sputter, but you kind of back your way into the playoffs, I don't know that that's all that helpful. Getting hot and being ready for that intensity is the big advantage of it. We twice asked about Forsberg in that interview. You asked about his scoring streak. I asked about how he's coached. And John Hines laid it on the line that he's still getting good scoring chances. So it's on Philip to put it in the back of the net. In your interactions with him, do you think he gets to a point, or like everyone can, is it more mental now, or, you know, you've also talked about, and watch his game, he's a guy that because he can go through the legs and puck handle through four guys, he tries that a lot. Maybe it's about simplifying. Do you have a read on that?
Well, I think it's a little bit of both. I don't really ever get the sense that Forsberg is just like mentally defeated about anything. He's a pretty laid back guy. And does he get frustrated? Yes, he does. But I don't think, especially when interacting with Forsberg in the room, I don't think you look at him right now and that he's in a bad place mentally or anything like that. I think he believes, like I do, that if he continues to get these chances and continues to put himself in position to score, eventually he's too talented to be kept off the score sheet. He will start to put the puck in the back of the net.
I think some of what you mentioned in terms of simplifying his game, at times that can be very helpful. Because, look, we get it. I mean, Forsberg is really talented. He's a guy that can do things with the puck that nobody else on this roster can even dream of doing, much less can go out and execute doing. So there is something to be said for that. Sometimes I think maybe he tries to make that play, that highlight reel play. And it's not even, I don't even think, the cognizant of, man, if I do this, this is gonna look really cool and this is going to be a high school play. I think it's just like, okay, I have the ability to do this. This could be, at the time, in the split second you're making the decision, the best way, in his opinion, to get the puck where it needs to be. Like, you've seen Philip Forsberg score goals between his legs like three or four times now in his career. It's not like he's sitting there saying, you know what I really want to do right now? I just want to shoot this between my legs. He feels like that's the best opportunity for him to get his shot off as quickly as he's able to do it. So sometimes his reading and reacting of the game, that's what allows him to be good. That's what allows him to play and score some of these clutch goals, because he thinks the game, I think, in a different way than really anybody else on the Predators roster does. But there have been a couple times during this stretch here in the month of February where I think he's been pressing a little bit too much and trying too hard instead of making the simple play that's right there in front of him, to make the simple outlet pass, to dump the puck into the corner, whatever the case may be. And that part, I think, is what's really plaguing him as of late.
And I was curious, so I just looked up his heat maps, or essentially where his shots are coming from on the ice. Last year, 7% of his shots came from beyond the circles, or essentially far out, but in front of the blue line. Now 12% this year, and where did those extra 5% come from? Shots right in front of the net, in the blue paint. I think getting to the net, I mean, don't you hear it time and time again? It's like a hockey coach's favorite phrase. Get to the net, get an easy one. Like the Colin Blackwell goal against the Senators on Tuesday.
Perfect
easy
example.
One. He was in a great location. I think it was Johansson on that play really made the play. And Blackwell gets a rebound off someone else's shot. Now, Forsberg not getting to the net tells me that perhaps it's as simple as getting there. You look at his other spots from the circles, percentages hold basically the same, but the reason that his shots are coming more from the outside are because they've come at the expense of getting to the net. There's 5% of your shots, you know, are from farther out than not in front of the net. Well, there's the difference in your shooting percentage. Maybe it's as simple as that. And John Hines is focused more on getting center of the ice action, which Laviolette so often didn't seem to really prioritize. He would let the defenseman bring the puck up the ice. John Hines wants to play a center ice game. That should fit Philip Forsberg, a guy as talented, as quick, with as good a hands as him. You would think is really good, especially when his centerman is able to make a play for him. He's as good a shot as they have on the team. You lay it all on the player, though. If he's still getting good opportunities, you got to put it in.
Well, and some of that's on the centerman as well. Like, I mean, for years he's played with Ryan Johansson and Victor Arvidsson, and those two guys have not been the same this year. And because of that, that line has not been together anywhere near as often this year as it normally has. And that goes back to what we were talking about earlier in terms of the line shuffling. John Hines, I think, is in a difficult place with that, because you have to do it, because no real line other than that Grimaldi, Bonino, Smith line has been running away with the playing time that you've given them, and been forcing you to keep them together with the way that they played and the way that their production has been on the ice. But it's also, if you're John Hines, balancing that with, okay, how long do I leave them together to give them that chance to be productive together, to gain that chemistry? And that, to me, is one of the tougher parts of being a coach in the NHL, is striking that balance of, okay, if we put this line together, they're not being productive, how long do I sit here and wait for it to be productive? And how quickly do I have to realize, hey, this may not work, I got to go try something else?
Well, let me hit you with this. I was just curious because I just looked at it for Forsberg, where his shots are coming from on the ice. Victor Arvidsson's, I looked up. Last year, 20% is an astronomical number to come from the blue paint,
yep,
which just means right in front of the goalie, in the goalie's lap. This year, only 10.
Yeah.
That's cut in half. Where are the extra shots coming from? Largely out, in the circles, way out on the wing, which has never been Victor Arvidsson's bread and butter. You know, it's interesting data to look at, that they're getting quality opportunities and they're not going in. Well, they might not be as quality as they've gotten in the past, and maybe that has to do with who they're playing with. But lo and behold, Victor Arvidsson and Philip Forsberg's difference in statistics might be as simple as those 4, 5, 6 easy goals that you get in the blue paint haven't come for them this year.
When we come back, Joe Rexroad from The Athletic will join us. He is up in Indianapolis at the NFL Combine. We'll get his report from there. Also, the Tom Brady news is continuing to swirl out there as we're on the air here today.
I just got a notification.
You did.
That.
You're listening to Morning Drive live from the Wholesale Inc. studio, powered by RumbleOn.com here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.